welcome everyone to the Screamcast, episode 73. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is BJ Colangelo.
Hi!
And also, Brad Henderson is in the house.
Set!
Oh, you didn't yawn this time!
No, we're making progress.
We're moving up in the world.
Making progress. I know.
I don't know, I might have other distractions to that episode.
Brad has opened the bottle a smidge, and he's been drinking a bit of the moonshine.
Oh, Lord. Not you didn't
really.
Tell me it was moonshine.
Or the Big Boss sauce. No, I was
no, it's oh, like, okay. I was telling Sean, a good drink to have is milk and Ovaltine mixed with vanilla vodka.
It is like, a good one.
It's really good, and like you just don't know how much you drink.
You gotta throw some rum chata in there.
What is it?
Have you never had rum chata before?
I don't know what that is. Can I come over?
We are in the same time zone. You totally could. No, rum chata, it tastes like when you have Cinnamon Toast Crunch and then you drink the milk at the bottom of the bowl, but it's alcohol.
Oh, fuck, that's
Holy
good.
Shit.
Right? No, I know.
Oh, Brian, watch out. Cops are after you. Watch out. Keep that stuff
on the deal. It's
they're coming after my meth head neighbors. You're safe.
I'm drinking a coffee shop of horrors, Debbie Rockun's Kill Devil Rumble. Smooth rum and caramel coffee. I should have thrown some rum in there, but it's very good coffee. They're a sponsor of the show. Check them out. All right.
Sponsor of the show.
Today, I know last show we had said that we were going to do a special Vinegar Syndrome show, but they have since... Are we getting feedback?
No, I'm just playing the soundtrack to Slumber Party Massacre in the background. Can you hear
my
it?
God, okay. But they have postponed their launch of Exploitation.tv for when is it going to be? It is September 4th, so it's coming up here. So we'll be
In September sometime.
Beginning of September. We will be posting that probably the same week we post this. So just keep an eye on the feed. An extra show is going to pop in on the feed at some point. I believe it's
September
4th. Spoiler
alert.
And be on the lookout in October, because while I was not with the Vinegar Syndrome episode, I will be with Vinegar Syndrome in October, and it's going to be awesome.
Nice. Well, today we are going to be talking Wormwood, a newish Scream Factory release. But before that, we need to jump into what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow, I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Oh my god, I forgot all about the signal.
It's okay, we'll give you some time to catch up. BJ, what do you got?
I forgot all about it. I didn't bring in my stuff. I have to go. I'll be back.
BJ's going to talk. You go grab your shit.
Oh, my God.
This is going to be incredible, people. Buckle up. Buckle up.
So, on my doorstep, I had some pretty awesome stuff. The first thing that I got was, ladies and gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains, starring a very – holy fuck, it's so good.
It's really good.
It's directed by Lou Adler. It stars a very, very young Diane Lane, and she's a punk rocker. And it's such an awesome like girl power movie. If you have daughters, let them watch this. Mm-hmm. It's so awesome. But yeah, it's definitely a punk rock movie. There's awesome music. There's like the fashion and design, like character designs in it are incredible. But I don't know. It just made me want to like. Pick up a guitar and start a riot girl band. Like, it's such a good film.
I feel like the White Stripes kind of stole that look a little bit. The red and white.
Oh, the skunks? Yeah, yeah.
A little bit.
Probably.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We're talking about the Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains, Brad.
Oh,
it's probably one of the best music movies out there ever.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And like, there's just so many moments that are just so fucking natch, like the moment where she's smoking a cigarette and they're like, didn't you know that every cigarette you smoke takes another day off your life, and her eyes get all big and she puts another cigarette in her mouth. I'm like, god, you're such a badass. Like, oh, I wish I was that cool. So yeah, that was the big one. And then the other one that I got, I can't remember, did I talk about Tangerine last time?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so I reached out to Sean Baker, the guy who made it, on Twitter, and he sent me Starlet, which is one of his other films. and it has to do with kind of the women that are into the sexy sex lifestyle of like pornography and whatnot, and it's beautiful. Like anybody who's like, oh, Hot Girls Wanted, no, fuck that movie, watch Starlet. Like it's so good, and it's such a realistic portrayal of kind of what that lifestyle actually is about, like, because it does show some of the downs of it, but it also shows like the ups, like the parts that no one ever wants to talk about, because heaven forbid we talk about women who enjoy having sex for a living. God, oh, why would we ever? So no,
it
was
a
real.
About it.
I know you do. but no, it was a great movie. It's very, very well crafted. It's well written. I do not understand why Sean Baker is not like this big person, because between Starlet and Tangerine, dude knows his shit. He knows what he's doing. So yeah, Starlet is fucking great. Check it out. If Tangerine's in theaters, check that out. Like just, oh God, it's so good. So those were like the two big ones that I got. And then I've been just kind of going through VHS that we've been acquiring, and I checked out a film that I always wanted to watch as a kid but then never got the chance to because of whatever reason. I watched Carnosaur. It was so much fun. Like, I've only seen it in bits and pieces is the thing. So like every time somebody's like Carnosaur, I'm like, oh yeah, Carnosaur. And then I was sitting there watching it, I'm like, holy shit, I don't think I've ever seen this all the way through. I think I'm just like collecting memories from like childhood of like the parts of it that I caught. So I've been telling people for years like how much I love this movie, and I hadn't actually fucking seen it. So I watched it and I was like, shit, this is a lot of fun. So yeah, Carnosaur was a big one, and it
I do own the
nice
Carnosaur
on the VHS.
I own the Carnosaur trilogy on DVD.
Wait, it's a trilogy?
Yeah, there's three of them.
There's three
Fuck
of them.
Me, no, it's not.
I think the third
not.
One is
oh
an Aliens
God.
Ripoff.
That's the best news I've heard all day.
It's fantastic.
I'm really excited about
like,
this
Like, somebody
right
really
now.
Needs to put these in a Blu-ray box set. Somebody, because that's so much fun to be had in these films. They're
oh,
not good,
crazy.
But they are just super fun. Because Carnosaur came out at the same time that Jurassic Park was in theaters. You know,
right.
It was, of course, Roger Corman, you know. I don't know what they do, but they did something where it won like some science fiction or science something awards. So they slapped them on the poster that they won these awards, award-winning film. I don't know what Corman does, but he pulls some strings to get these winning these just fake awards or something.
Well, you have to just put those like two little leaves up there, like that little wreath, and it looks like you accomplished.
Oh, your laurel leaves.
Yeah.
And then the last one is that I watched Travis Betts's The Dead Inside, which is a musical.
Oh.
But it is a horror musical, and it's really weird. It's really weird. I also saw The Devil's Carnival, too, but I'm not really allowed to talk about that.
Oh.
But it's – oh, I had so much fun. But anyway, so The Dead Inside, it's like a zombie love story musical. But it's not like cheesy jazz hands musical. It reminds me kind of like Dr. Horrible, where like the songs just kind of happen and they're funny. But it's a really, really beautiful film to watch. The cinematographer, God, I can't remember her name, but I watched the behind the scenes on it, and she's a photographer. So like she makes this like these really beautiful and weird abstract photography pieces. So watching that sort of transition into film was really interesting. It's definitely low budget. It's very weird. But a lot of Travis Betts' films are weird, like Low and Joshua. They're both kind of weird. But if you like musicals and you like horror, which I do, and I know I'm one of like five people out there, check out The Dead Inside. And that's what was on my doorstep.
Awesome. What are your thoughts on? I'm having a brain fart on that name, on the name of the film right now. Starts with an R. They take people's organs.
Repo the Genetic Opera.
Yeah, yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm super fucking into it. I just don't think that Alexa Vega can sing, and it drives me crazy.
oh no, which the is singing my... is the worst. I think the singing is possibly the worst part of the musical, which is
not necessarily,
it's more operatic. I guess
it...
with these.
Well, yeah, it's a rock opera. Like, yeah. First of all, it has Sarah Brightman in it, and Sarah Brightman
she's super good. Yeah.
Christine, a Phantom of the Opera. Like, she is amazing, and yes. That's kind of why I like had like a proverbial shit my pants moment when I was watching The Devil's Carnival 2. And like, it's not spoilers or anything, but like, Adam Pascal's in it, who was in Rent, who I love. He's also, which a lot of people don't know, but he's also the lead singer of the band that Jack Black gets kicked out of in School of Rock. Nice. Like, he's that guy. But then it also has like Barry Bostwick and David Hasselhoff and Jesus Christ Superstar himself, Ted Neely. Like, oh God, like I was nerding out so hard watching this movie. I was like, I don't even care if this could be a piece of shit and I'm going to love it because fucking Ted Neely's in this and he has glitter in his hair and it's amazing. Cause I'm a total musical theater dork.
The Devil's Carnival?
Yeah, the second one. I think the second one's a lot better than the first. That's just awesome. Me. But yeah, I like Repo. I really do. I just don't think Alexa Vega can sing. I think it's one of the only films that Paris Hilton's ever done where she's utilized for exactly what she's good for. Mm-hmm. And I think that the like songs like Exaggerate Anatomy are really like fucking catchy.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, I will always support like Darren Bousman's filmmaking because it is some of the most punk rock filmmaking ever. He's like, you know what, I don't give a fuck if you like this, I'm making it the way that I want to with my budget and my vision, and you can suck it. And yeah. I love that. It's like no one else is doing that, no one's taking that kind of risk, and he's doing it. And you know what, I will never knock that hustle. I don't care if people don't like it, he's brilliant and I love it.
No, I love it too. I have a lot of fun with that. I think I'm due for a rewatch on that. I've just been eyeing it on myself.
Can we please do a horror musicals episode? There are so many of them. Like, you'll sit there there are.
I'll be out on that episode.
Are you going to talk shit on Fan with a Paradise, Brad? Because I will drive to Florida and punch you square in the jaw.
Like,
well, we may have to leave Brad at home, BJ, and you and I will do a horror musical episode. I want to do that.
I've seen Repo and The Devil's Carnival, and they're the two worst things I've ever seen in my life.
All right. Well, Brad,
we'll give you the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
We'll give you a night off at some point.
Don't say that. Take it back.
I'm not taking it back. Okay. What's on your doorstep, Sean?
On my doorstep, the first thing I want to talk about, I just got this today, and I'm super excited about it. It's a book. It's called The Satanic Panic: Pop Cultural Paranoia in the 1980s.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
Edited by Keir Law Janice and Paul Krupp. We've had Paul
She
Krupp
is a genius, so that's exciting.
Of course, there's quotes from Mike McPadden. It's an anthology of a bunch of editorials by different authors and writers, kind of analyzing the whole, you know, satanic panic from the 80s, which I definitely lived through because I had extremely evangelical Christian parents and they were caught up in it because we weren't allowed to watch certain things. I remember that Sesame Street was banned because there was gays.
Count Von Count.
Because there was gays working on Sesame Street and Count Dracula was satanic. He-Man was satanic. Smurfs was satanic. But I could watch G.I. Joe and Transformers, but those were violent, but I could watch those. So it was like this weird double standard, you know, which religion always has. There's always double standards, but I'm super excited about this because I was always fascinated by like the whole satanic thing. I even in high school or no junior high, I even wrote an essay on Satanism. And so I've always been fascinated by the subject. I'm really excited to read this book.
So do you want to come to Detroit and we'll go visit the Baphomet?
That would be awesome.
Okay, cool. Let's go.
But anyway, I'm just thumbing through it. I mean, there's a section on, you know, heavy metal and the satanic bands and everything like that. So I believe it is available. It's from Canada. It is available on spectacularoptical.ca. I'm not sure about Amazon or Amazon.ca, but you may want to check it out. But it's called Satanic Panic: Pop Cultural Paranoia in the 1980s, and it is awesome. I've been waiting for it. They did an Indiegogo campaign, so
yeah,
I finally got it today. So that's awesome. I got a couple more things. Nothing too much. Let me pull them up here. Yeah, nothing really great that I watched as far as horror goes. I checked out the comedy The Watch, which is pure dog shit. I know it's the dog shit last
week.
The
Lodge, like the movie with Ben Stiller?
It is awful. Like,
what the fuck is wrong with you?
Why would you do that?
I was curious because the setup is, you know, I live in the suburbs and we have a neighborhood watch, and these neighborhood watch guys stumble across an alien invasion.
God, you're so white.
And they make these stupid racial jokes where Ben Stiller has one black friend. Ha ha. But the movie, like, the premise is fun in a way the premise is, but the movie is handled just awful. Like, it at the beginning, there's a really gory moment. Like,
I don't think
like
you really need to tell us. We know.
And, no, and
but I'm seconding Brad.
No, there's some... There's an inspired moment of gore at the beginning, and I was like, okay, cool, here we go. But they abandon, like, the whole horror aspect of, you know, aliens coming down and everything for the stupid family drama between Ben Stiller and his wife and him building his neighborhood watch.
He's just trying to get an Oscar. But, Walter Mitty failed him.
It is truly awful. I'm sure everyone knows that, but I had to see how awful it was for myself. My wife and I, she wanted to watch something kind of light and fun, and I saw that. I was like, well, let's watch this.
She
should divorce you.
It was awful. And
I want a divorce.
She thought it was
awful.
Tell
your hot
wife
to divorce you for your terrible taste.
I'm saying that I hated it.
I know, but what would, like, of all the things to watch, why would you watch it?
Because she wanted to watch a comedy, and that was up, and I was like, well, there's, you know, possibly, maybe I can, maybe.
You should have watched For a Good Time Call. That's on Netflix and funny.
Awesome. I should have. I'm regretting.
But you're a terrible husband.
Regretting my decision.
You could have done a puppet show, and she would have been more entertained.
You're right. It
I was
awful.
Just drinking something, and I just spit it all over the place.
Like, why?
So, avoid the watch at all costs, which all of you have.
We all have. Like, you don't have to tell us.
But, you know,
next you're
going
to tell me to watch The Cobbler.
Hell no. No.
Oh, God.
Dear
God, no.
I
got, like, halfway through. But I wasn't even paying attention. I didn't even know what was going on.
Yeah. It's like they had this great premise, and then they hired people who had no idea what any sci-fi or... It's kind of funny. I mean, you know, it's whatever. But
here you go. Sean's actually a fan, hiddenly.
I'm not a fan at all. It is awful.
There's Ben Stiller in it. He's a big name. He likes it.
Ugh. It's horrible. Anyway, moving along. The movie that just came out this last week... called Northmen, a Viking Saga.
Oh, God.
And it was actually pretty good. I kind of dug it. It's a brutal, violent...
Who released it?
Anchor Bay.
Yeah.
Anchor Bay released it. One of the dudes from
Ryan Quantin is
what
in
the
that.
Hell is his name? From Ryan... True Blood. Ryan Quantin.
Yeah, he, whatever
he's in it.
Quatain. Whatever it says.
He's an Aussie. But he was good in it. The leads, it's like a ragtag group of Vikings get stranded in Scotland, and they need to fight their way through, and they get to where they have hidden boats. It's a very standard action flick, but the action's handled really well. It's really
boring. Cool. Fuck.
It does drag a little in the middle of the film. But I dug watching it.
I feel like this is a running theme. You're like, I like this movie. It drags a little in the middle, but I like this movie.
No, overall, you know, I like dumb action flicks. Like, overall, like, you
then
know,
you love this.
Do
you like
spot.
Ironclad too, don't you?
I fucking love Ironclad. You kidding me? Ironclad's
this
awesome.
Is,
oh my God.
This is the equivalent to the boring bullshit of Ironclad.
What? Dude, Ironclad, Paul Giamatti is overacting the shit.
That's not good, though.
But it's hilarious, and it makes me laugh, and I enjoy
it. In your defense, I genuinely, non-ironically, love Batman and Robin for the reason of Uma Thurman's overacting. It's fucking great. So,
sometimes a little overacting goes a long way. But Northmen, I mean, if it's ever streaming on Netflix and you want to just watch something, just a dumb action flick that's really... You know, well done in the violent department. You know, I would say check it out. So,
oh, dude,
if you like Ironclad, you'll like.
I wasn't even gonna talk about it because I got it and I watched it and I was like, good Lord, I refused to bring it on the show because it was so boring.
I don't know. Ugh. I kind of liked it. I liked the.
Well, now I feel like I need to watch it, you know? So I can be the only vote.
The only exciting thing in it is that Johan Hegg is in it, and he's the vocalist for Amon Amarth, which is a which is a heavy Swedish death metal band, and he's in it, which was really weird. But that's the only reason actually I had any. Reason to watch
it. Yeah, the cinematography was good. The costumes were all right. The fights were good. You know, the acting
pointed
was
a camera in a direction. They were like, "Go."
there were plot holes. My wife was picking out the plot holes, which was really fun. We had fun with it.
You made her watch this and The Watch?
Yeah, dude.
How are you still married? Is that why you took her to the winery? Did you have to make up for all of this? No.
She liked Northman too. She had fun with it. So I don't know. She hated The Watch. Liked Northman. I don't know. What am I going to say? What am I going to do? But watch it and judge for yourself if you want. But I had fun with it. So there you go.
Next.
And that's it. That's all I got. I think that's all I got.
There's a lot of mediocrity going on in that pile that you brought to the table.
Fair enough. Very fair. But Brad made me watch a movie for this week's podcast, and we'll get into that later.
Let's talk about it now.
No, we gotta wait. All right, but do you have anything?
What was on your doorstep, Brad? Yeah. What was on your doorstep?
We can't jump ahead.
Remember that segment you forgot about that you needed to run and get stuff for?
Yeah, I got it. Well, I didn't get to. I no, it's okay. I'll pass.
What'd you watch?
Well, not really. It was just that I didn't really watch. I haven't really watched anything new, and the only thing that I that we really didn't get to talk about last time was the Arrow movies. We didn't spend a lot of time on those. We talked to the Arrow guys, but we didn't mention the movies.
Well, what are some movies you've seen recently that we haven't discussed yet? We had the big Arrow show, but tell us about Contamination. I haven't watched it yet. I'm due to watch it, but
oh my god.
Talk about it, man.
You watch Northmen over Contamination?
My wife's not going to watch Contamination. I go to bed at 9 o'clock at night because I'm so freaking tired because I'm up at the butt crack of dawn.
Because you're old.
Because I'm old. So I haven't been able to watch that yet.
Well.
But times are a-changing.
Okay, Bob Dylan.
9:30.
And I had a 11-year anniversary taking up my entire weekend, which was awesome. So I'll
you
take
should
that
have,
above
because you had to pay
Jen
back for watching these fucking movies.
I do like that Brad actually calls her by her name, and I just refer to her as your hot wife.
Yeah.
So anyway,
she answers to both.
I watched some Arrow movies. We didn't get to really go into detail about them, other than I'll just talk a little bit about Contamination. Contamination is good. Yes, it's so fucking weird, but it has. Now you want to talk about a unique premise. Contamination's about an alien somewhat invasion with these eggs that are imported. But the eggs don't hatch or anything. It's just that if you get too close to the egg, it blows up and then you blow up. So it has this really weird...
So it's like they saw the beginning of Alien or Alien and were like, oh, it's the eggs.
Well, that's what it's like. Like the eggs look like giant like critter eggs mixed with a little bit of alien facehugger stuff. But it's just so weird because it's like it's such a big deal, but it's like, dude, just fucking walk away. Like they don't move. People put them there. So it's like, just fucking go. Like, get away. Just run. It's cool. But, like, they don't mess
with
them.
It's like an electric fence. Just don't touch them.
And it's just really funny because, you know, when they redubbed these movies and they went back and they recorded ADR, it's like the actors that were doing the voiceovers didn't know just when to shut up. So that like they'll say like a line, it's like, "Hey, let's go over here." What is that on the floor? Oh, nothing. You know, and it's like, "Oh, look, there's eggs. There must be like 10 or 20 of these things, and they're green." And it's just like, just really, just like awful, awful dialogue. But it's one of those Italian flicks that's fun to watch because it's just so silly. But it's fun. Whatever. And it's amazing to actually see this thing.
Dude,
Blu-ray.
I found the soundtrack online when I was putting together the last week's show, and that soundtrack's awesome.
Yeah, the soundtrack's really bizarre.
It's by Goblin,
too.
Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. By The Goblin, by the way. They call themselves The Goblin.
One of the versions of Goblin, I'm assuming.
Yeah, there's like a shit ton.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, like I said, just seeing that this thing is on Blu-ray and it's like fucking packed. Like, it's literally a paragraph of shit they have on the back here that they've put together. You know, because I always think it was funny when you flip over old DVDs, special features, interactive menu.
Trailers.
Trailer.
Yeah, trailer to a movie that's not this movie.
PDF and, of the script. What?
Yeah, it's really weird. TV spots. But, you know, seeing this 2K restoration, there's new interviews and Q&As with the director and Ian McCullough. There's, you know, about the music, you know, just kind of Luigi Cozzozzi is his name that directed it, but he goes by the name of the U.S. name of Lewis Coates on the film, just because that's what the Italians did, so Americans didn't see it was an Italian-made movie or they wouldn't watch it. That's why, I guess. And then just kind of the keyboard discussion with the guy from Goblin, what's his name? Claudio Simonetti. Just kind of a weird package deal. And the little, what do you call these? Like lenticular covers?
That's a slipcover I'm definitely keeping. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really, really awesome. And I'm not a big fan of slipcovers, but it's pretty cute.
Yep. It's cute.
And the other film that I mentioned a lot, and I just wanted to reiterate because I feel that it's going to get kind of shoved to the side because it's kind of a way lesser known Western, was Cemetery Without Crosses, which is really great. It's just a really oddly paced spaghetti Western, but it's just a normal revenge flick. It's just, it's very dark. It's not your, like, I don't know, Hollywood spaghetti Western. It does take a different toll on kind of like the brutality and themes. So, but I want to reiterate again to definitely pick it up because it's got a killer soundtrack and it's a pretty good movie because I like Westerns.
Awesome.
But that's pretty much it. I just wanted to talk about those again.
Okay.
And if you want to talk about any other Westerns, I will. You want to talk about any other Westerns?
Well, we can move into let's move into.
You want to talk about Navajo Joe?
I haven't seen Navajo Joe.
You haven't? Oh, dude, it's so good. You need to pick it up. It's a Kino. I think Kino released it.
I watched the editor, but I didn't watch any of the special features yet, so I don't want to talk about it yet.
Oh, yeah, the editor's really good.
Well, we're going to have to get Astron.
I saw that fantastic.
We need to get Astron 6 on the show.
BJ is going to.
I will lose my mind.
She'll lose her mind.
We will hold off on.
Obsessed with them.
We will hold off on the editor talk.
I'll just say
that. We're going to work that out.
I've on in talks with Adam Brooks already, but I can't make anything definite.
God, I'm so in love with him. It's not even funny.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's okay.
Well, I look forward to that.
We do the Navajo Joe theme. I'll play it.
Are you looking for it?
No, I got it on my computer. I'm playing it already.
Oh. I can't hear it. All right. Moving on.
Moving on.
Are you ready? Let's talk about Wormwood Road of the Dead.
Oh, my God. How much do we have to talk about? I forgot about this one.
What? Dude, I told you before we started the show what we were talking about.
I don't even know anymore.
We planned this, like, last week.
Yeah. I'm good. I remember Wormwood.
All right.
I feel like Wormwood's just going to be the three of us being like, oh, it's awesome, for like 10 minutes.
I don't think so. I don't think Sean liked it.
Sean, did you not like Wormwood?
Here we go.
Wormwood, directed by Kia Roach-Turner. Screenplay by Kia Roach-Turner and Tristan Roach-Turner.
You don't have to say Roach-Turner like they're fucking assholes.
I'm not saying that. So it's basically a zombie movie. It's structured a little bit differently. There's a kind of a post-apocalyptic feel to it. Although I think they're overselling the post-apocalyptic Mad Max-ishness of it, because
why do you hate fun?
No. Here, I don't. So,
oh my God.
So the movie's all right. I had a good time with it. It wasn't awesome. Like I didn't walk away from it going like, now that was an awesome kick-ass movie. It had beats. It had little beats of kick-assness. I think the structure, especially at the beginning, for me, kind of threw me off a little bit. Because it starts somewhere and then it goes back and then you're so I think the structure kind of threw me off a little bit. Overall, though, I think the action and the actors and everything, and especially that one, what's his name? Is it Leon? Is it Leon Birchall? Benny?
Are you talking about the darker complected gentleman?
Yeah. He's
fucking hilarious.
He was great. He was fantastic. There's one moment, I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but you guys know what I'm talking about, where there's an accident when they first meet. That moment is great. And he makes the movie for me because he's so likable. But I had fun with it. I liked it. I didn't love it. But I definitely think it's a film, that
do you have to love everything, though? I mean, can't a movie just be fun?
It was fun. It was okay. It was all right. It was fun. It had moments of things that I liked and some things that I didn't like.
All right, we're going to hold the phone because you talked with more excitement about that bullshit Viking nonsense.
Yeah, than this. And this is like 1,000 times better than the Northmen, the Viking saga.
I think I greeted with it much enthusiasm as like they both like I think it's better. I think it's a better genre film than Northman for sure, and it definitely has a sense of humor that Northman didn't. And that's the thing that sets it apart is it does have this really macabre like sense of humor, and doesn't take itself completely seriously like with that one, the doctor and the girl. I think I was thrown off by the structure of the film, for me. Kind of took me a while to get into it. I loved the second half. It kind of took a while for me to get into it, but once the second half started and we're with the characters and things started going down, for me it got a lot more fun. And like I said,
I think it's a lot stronger in the first half.
Like Leon Birchall is really 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 fun. I kind of wanted to see more of him.
I don't know.
I'm just going to be really basic about it and say that I think Wormwood was tits awesome. And that Sean is out of his damn mind. That's my review. That's okay. It
has, I don't know, like, I liked it because it, you know, it does tread a little bit of new water with having, like, you know, linear plot lines with everybody, and it all kind of comes together. That was fun, but the movie does have this large amount of dark humor, which is hilarious, but it's not a comedy whatsoever.
Right.
But it just shows this, it shows like kind of the psychotic side of the doctor who is obviously, doing these experiments in this fucking cool ass lab that I just want to like be there. And then, with the lead Barry, it really has some heartfelt moments of him trying to, save everybody and what he went through in order to get to this point that he's at, which, it's fun to watch a movie where, how do I say this without spoiling anything? There's always like a purpose for people to get to point A to point B in these zombie films, or to find somebody, or to rescue, or find a cure. This one kind of sums up what's going on very quickly. And then it just goes out balls to the wall. We really don't give a fuck anymore. What do we have to live for?
Right.
It just kind of has that that attitude. And I think that's what made the movie unique, is that we can have fun with the characters and we kind of feel for them all because it literally is who fucking cares anymore. Right. And not a lot of films have that. I mean, every – like name a zombie film – and there's a reason why they're trying to live, not because they just want, like, Day of the Dead. They're trying to get the fucking island, You know, the remake of Dawn of the Dead. They're trying to get to a fucking island. You know, the old Dawn of the Dead. Roger and or not Roger. Roger dies, but what's Ken Forey's character's name? Shit,
I don't know off the top of my head.
Well, anyways, you know, they escaped. There's many zombie films where they try to find a cure. They reestablish their community, and then the community breaks down because some asshole wants to, you know, do things his own way.
I like that they kind of...
His name's Peter, by the way. My phone on mute, and it was stuck.
I do like that they don't go into kind of like social politics or things like that. There is definite momentum.
Well, Romero did that with all his right, but, zombie movies. There's always a social status with the films. But I just like this was,
a survival, like, in a sense.
But in a way, it's still not. It's just like, let's kind of get together. We'll do this. Everything falls apart. And then it's like, who gives a fuck anymore?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I really like that kind of approach with a movie like this because, dude, zombie movies are so fucking boring these days because it's the same goddamn thing over and over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, nice to see something a little refreshing, which looks – the gore looks great.
Mm-hmm.
The characters are great. It's funny. And also, like, it's just – I don't know. You kind of tell, like, right – and I think halfway through the film, you know how this is going to end up. It's kind of obvious, but I like that approach because we can at least have fun with it. There's not some dramatic escape or some huge plan that comes together with numerous people in order to, survive the zombie apocalypse. It's just balls to the wall. What is that? Is that something to drink?
What?
Is that something? Are you drinking something?
No.
Oh, it sounded like a can opener.
No, not at all. But I think that you touched on the important thing is that it's fun. I am so sick of, you know, everybody's, and I'm one of the most, like, looking for the political, socio, whatever side of everything. Like, that's kind of my thing. But it's so nice to see people that are like, fuck it, we're just going to make a movie that's fun. Like, there's no deep and brooding, heavy meaning. I mean, like, the post-apocalyptic thing is a hot topic for all sorts of films, like this dystopian society. Like, everybody's making fucking dystopian society movies, but everyone's trying to make it this big, brooding, like, overly emotional bullshit, and this is fun. It's fucking Mad Max with zombies. Yeah. It's awesome. Like, how can you not have fun or encourage this sort of behavior? Like, that's, like, the people that are like, I don't know how I feel about Turbo Kid. Shut up! Just watch a movie and have fun. God damn.
I do like, and you said, like, the fun factor of the film. Like, they don't go overboard, and they're not reaching for laughs. Like, I saw the trailer for Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse, and that's like, oh, that's zombie comedy, and it hits all the marks of zombie comedy. I haven't seen it, I don't know, but I was kind of left cold by that trailer. But Wormwood,
right? Well, like, I think Wormwood takes kind of the same approach, as obviously not in the same tone, but it very much takes the same kind of approach of Shaun of the Dead, where they're not making a joke and then winking at the camera. Right. They're making a joke and it lands because it's a good joke.
Yes.
And that's what Wormwood is. All of the comedy aspects of it, they're not, trying to, like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, haha, wasn't that clever? It's not like that. It's like, hey, we're going to do this and it's going to be fucking funny and you're going to laugh. And it works.
And that's the kind of the same thing as, like, how the newest Mad Max movie operated. Was there were funny moments in that film, but it was everything, the momentum of the film was just kept going and going. It didn't pause for any wink winks or anything like that. It's just the humor happened because of the situation, and the characters' involvement in the situation and that, and then they moved along, So I found a lot to appreciate with the film. I think just overall I wasn't as excited once it ended as I thought I would be, but this happens all the time to me though with kind of movies that are hyped in a way.
Oh God!
He said the magic word.
But anyway,
Jeez. I want to see.
I hated the film. I said I was like, it was all right.
I want to see you at a movie festival where you go into the film and literally no one has seen it.
Yeah, and I would love that.
I want to see that.
I would love that because that's the thing. I hate dragging in expectations and I hate watching trailers.
But
and,
don't.
Trailers are everywhere, man, and Twitter. Dude, and
I literally
Facebook.
I have
you
never
can't
seen
escape it.
I have never, yeah, but you have to click on it. I literally have not watched a trailer to anything in the past, like, I would say year. Dude, I still haven't even had seen a Mad Max trailer. Like, yeah. I literally do not watch trailers. I didn't even know there was a trailer for Wormwood, for Christ's sakes.
I don't know if there was or not. I didn't even see a trailer for Wormwood. Everyone was just, exploding over it. In ecstasy once it came out and seeing how amazing it was, and then comparing it to Mad Max, it's like, I wouldn't give it a Mad Max comparison. I would say zombie, post-apocalyptic.
But also the reason
combo.
They're doing that is this movie doesn't stand a chance with the shit that's out there. So, yeah, people are beefing it up to get the word out because if, some Joe Schmo hears about Wormwood or something, because I was at Best Buy the other day, and I was just walking the shelves, and then, there's, these two kids, right? Just two punk kids, look like little fuckboys or something. that fucking weird hairstyle and, the fucking pink, big glasses they wear. You know what I'm talking about?
I have no idea.
Yes.
That must be a Florida thing.
No, sorry. It's everywhere. No,
yeah, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. So anyways,
I don't get out that often.
two kids that look like they just came from a Justin Bieber concert or something, or One Direction. The one kid turns to the other one, he's like, hey, have you seen this Wormwood? And the kid goes, yeah, it's really fucking badass. And I was like, wait a second. Like, you've watched Wormwood and you also think it's badass? That's badass. Because if you
First
think-
of all, it'd be 5 seconds of summer, not One Direction. Get with the times, Brad.
I can't think of any of the new bands. But, it really said something that's like, wow, you actually saw Wormwood, and you don't look like the audience that, would normally watch a film like that. Not, criticizing anybody, but let's face it, like, the majority of people that watch movies will probably not see Wormwood unless it shows up on Netflix. So
And Netflix is pimping it super hard. It's like it's featured every time I log on. Okay. Oh my god, okay. Yeah, it's front page.
Oh, I didn't know that. Then that's how he saw it. Then,
yeah, it's front page, and and that's the beauty of Netflix is that people want to shit on streaming and shit on it all they want because
yeah, it makes
killing physical media or whatever. But it's also bringing things to a new audience that would never see them. Like my fucking sorority sister, Not my sorority sister, my sister who is like a sorority girl. She calls, she doesn't need me to give her movie recommendations anymore because she'll just send me a message and be like, hey, what's good on Netflix? I think this will be good, but it only has one star. Is that true or not? And I'm like, no, it's true. That movie sucks. Okay, cool. I'm going to watch this instead with 5 stars. I'm like, that's perfect. Like, one, it makes my job easier. And two, now we have, an entire group of 21-year-old drunk sorority girls that are watching movies like A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which they would never see if it wasn't for Netflix.
Yeah, it's true. Completely agree, 100%. So yeah, when people pimp these movies out, it's for a reason. I mean, we want these movies to be successful. It's not like the whole hyping thing isn't in – hype isn't my vocabulary. Like I want to pimp a movie out as much as possible. I'll talk about, I wouldn't shut up about The Battery. I wouldn't shut up, about many films. Absentia, I wouldn't shut up about it. It's because I wanted that movie. I wanted my friends to be like, man, what the fuck is Brad talking about this movie? Like, why won't you shut the fuck up? And I had a friend tell me when I was at Fantastic Fest, I mentioned it, and he was like, oh God, you're the one that wouldn't shut up about the fucking movie. He's like, you know what? But I finally listened to you because you tweeted about it 100 times. I finally watched it and I really dug it. Mission accomplished.
Exactly. I have no problem being an 80s hype woman. Like, I will be motherfucking Spinderella for a movie that I like. I don't care.
Because just because we talk about it, Wormwood, yeah, it's not the best movie ever. It's not the best zombie movie. It's not, you know...
But it's different.
But it's different, it's unique, and it's completely, like, yeah, from what we watch in the theater and what is number one at the box office, it can stand next to that on Netflix. It can stand next to what fucking Hunger Games or some whatever fucking popular movie kids like.
Hunger Games.
You know, but it can stand, like, you can scroll through and Wormwood is right up there with big time movies. And the reason why it is because people pimp it up. They talk about it. They hype it up because they want to get the word out. If you tweet about it, if you Facebook share it enough, you're going to get the word out. And I think that's the whole point. And that's the reason why these movies are becoming more successful. Now, people watching will be like, man, I heard about this movie by 1,000 people and it sucked. It's not that you're missing the point. Like, at least you watched it. That's the point.
Yeah.
But don't let yourself, it's not just talking to you, but this goes for everybody. Like, just go in and watch a movie. Just be like, oh, that's the movie I'm going to watch because a bunch of people recommended it. Not because everybody thinks it is awesome, I'm going to think it's awesome too. Like, no, just that's the movie that we want you to watch right now. So why don't you give it a shot and you let us know if you like it or not. Not like, oh, it wasn't as good as people said it was. No, that's not the right answer. What did you truly think about the film without any preconceived notions of what you thought it was going to be?
Well, because that's the other thing too, is that there are so many people that I think struggle with the idea of having an opinion that's completely on their own. Like, so many people are afraid, you know, to stand up for what they believe in, you know, even with something as simple as, yeah, I like that movie, because they don't want to be ostracized or they don't want to feel stupid or left out or whatever. And I just think that that's ridiculous. Like, there are so many movies that, you know, I think are shitty or that Brad thinks are shitty.
Like,
but
what?
Like, you don't like Reboot the Genetic Opera, and I love it. And just
shitty.
Because you don't like it, that doesn't invalidate my liking of it, the same way that my liking of it doesn't invalidate your dislike of
it. Whoever likes it is stupid.
See? And, like, that's the shit people are afraid of. Like, they're afraid that something like that's going to happen because they're fucking, you know, spineless assholes and like, oh, I can't handle it if someone on the internet doesn't like me. Fucking grow up. Either you like a movie or you don't. You know what I like? I like The Happening. Eat my dick. I will argue about it all day. Like, and that's the mentality people need to have. Like, be passionate about the things that you like. There's no such thing as a guilty pleasure. You like it or you don't. Moving on. Sorry, I'm in a horrible mood tonight.
With that scenario, I dig Wormwood. I mean, I do like it. I'm just, you know, it. You know, I don't know. I had some issues with the how they put it together a little bit, but that's it.
And that's
everything
fair.
Else,
you hate
everything
fun.
Else.
We know this.
Everything else. It was really fun.
I'm just kidding.
The structure for me was just a little bit off. But the next time I watch it, I'm not going to notice the structure. You know what I mean? This always happens the first time I watch a film.
Right, and like, and here's the other thing though too, is that like, yeah, we're ribbing on you a little bit because you know you have a different opinion than us, but you're not gonna like leave this pod. Well, maybe you will. I don't know what you do.
I mean, I love it, guys. I love it. There's no problems with it. I love whatever you guys say.
Right, like you're not gonna leave this podcast and like go cry in the corner because BJ and Brad like the movie that I didn't like, and now I'm alone. Like, you're not gonna do that because you're a fucking adult, and it's a great thing to do is be an adult. So yeah, no, you're allowed to be indifferent towards Wormwood. I'm gonna still make fun of you
not,
for
I'm
it
not,
because
I'm
that's
not,
just
I wouldn't
what
say
I
I'm
do.
Indifferent. I'm indifferent to, I guess, the structure. I think the movie deserves to be seen, and I think
okay,
it's definitely
yeah,
worth checking out.
You can be indifferent
out.
To the structure. I'm still just gonna use that as a way to make fun of you because that's the relationship we have.
What I'm really interested in seeing, and I haven't had time to watch it yet, of course, I used to watch special features all the time, and lately I just don't have the time to do it, but on the Blu-ray, there's an audio commentary with the Roach-Turner brothers, which I would love to hear, because movies like this, especially kind of little passion projects, first-time directors, I love hearing how they basically pulled the movie together. And I think this movie was either a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo campaign to get crowdfunded. But there's the commentary. There's also a behind the scenes documentary, which I really want to see. So this is the kind of movie that, you know, yeah, maybe I didn't like the whole movie or parts of it or whatever, but this is the kind of movie that I seek out the special features to hear how they put everything together. And that always enhances the second viewing for this one. Cause there's passion behind it.
I was just gonna say, and I bet after you watch that, you'll rewatch the film and love it.
Well, it happens, but it happens to me all the time, and I'm not shying away from that. I say this every time we have this type of discussion. I never am one and done with a film that I'm on the fence with. You know, if there's a lot of passion behind it, I would definitely give it a second chance, and I would never like write it off. Look, Northman, I'll probably never watch that again. Wormwood, I would definitely rewatch. You know,
but that's the thing is, like, Northman, you might like, oh, I had fun with it, but dude, that's one of the most forgettable films I've seen this year. Like, that's the thing is, you got to think like, oh, I enjoyed it for that moment, but will it sit with me?
Right. Exactly.
Like, I think about Wormwood, like, you know, every once in a while, because one thing I really liked is the gritty cinematography that was super close up a lot. Like, I really dug that. Like, mm-hmm. they're really close up with the characters quite a bit, and like the beads of sweat and like just how murky and dirty like the film looks. Like, I really enjoyed that. Like, that's an aspect that I really, you know, that stuck with me.
Yeah. Well, but, I love the use of blood too. They don't shy away from you can tell there's a little bit of digital manipulation, but they're the splatter is real. The blood lands, it sticks on stuff. It's, you know what I mean? I really appreciated their use and blend of practical and CGI. I think that's the way it should be done. And I hate it when you're watching like a movie, like especially zombie movies, like Walking Dead's an example. Like whenever they shoot a zombie, there's blood splatter, but like the blood just disappears in the air. You guys notice that on these CGI blood things? Whenever they throw CGI blood.
I was just having too much fun. I didn't pay attention to it.
This is something I'm always, you know.
I think on one side, if we research it, I think for ratings, or like for the rating, and for it to be on television and be able to get away with that, CGI blood is more acceptable than real blood.
Well,
so that's the reason why they CG a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And they can tone it down if they have to. I mean, I get it. But even in some movies, and movies are getting better, but even like 300, you know, that's supposed to be stylistic, but that CGI blood just evaporates in the air, you know.
And it's, right, ugh, but
it's ridiculous.
I think that's what it's supposed to do.
I guess. They get away with it because it's more of a stylistic choice. But what I wanted to talk about, too, is kind of how, like, right now especially, we're seeing a lot of, like, is zombie everything? And I don't know if that's maybe part of my issue, too, is, like, zombie fatigue. Do you guys think
it's been like that since the
90s. Yeah, but yeah. I mean, with, like, The Walking Dead and everything,
There's zombie resurgence like every 10 years.
Yeah.
Like we had it back, like we had it in the 80s, and then it came back in the 90s, and then it hit again right when Dawn of the Dead came out because it made a lot of money.
Yep.
And then it disappeared, and then it came back really heavy with The Walking Dead.
Do you think, I mean, every iteration though, like they bring something different to the table. Like right now it's like the dark and gritty and, you know what I mean? The dramatic, like Walking. I gave up Walking Dead on the beginning of season 2. I said, "Fuck this show, I'm done," because it had such a strong start, and then just ended up just being just grinding to a complete halt by the end of the first season, and then season 2, there's aimlessly. It was just aimless. And then now we got Fear of the Walking Dead, which sounds like it's just another kind of aimless offshoot. You know?
I was so fucking bored. I was so bored.
So do you guys think like that Wormwood, at least you can say it has a sense of energy to it that all these other things don't have, you know? I mean, there's zombie movies for days. I mean, I got an Xbox One and I bought a handful of games, and I looked at them, like half of my games include zombies. I got Dead Rising 3, I got Dying Light, and then
Dead Rising 3 is so much fun.
It's fun. It is fun. Sunset Overdrive, which is like a weird sense of kind of zombie mutants. But like everything has zombies in it. Zombies. And are you guys okay with that? I mean, they're kind of like the faceless, boogeyman, I guess. They're always easy to.
It just depends. It depends. Like, what I find interesting about zombies is how people act around them. That's my draw into the zombie world. Not because they're zombies and I want to see zombies tear people open. I want to see the characterization. I want to see how people deal with. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's the reason why I like Dawn of the Dead is that, you know, they deal with the zombie apocalypse, but then they try to live in a mall. You know, they try to have a kid. They try to still keep their sanity, mm-hmm. you know, and then they are met with a bunch of vigilantes that just want to fucking, you know, steal and kill everybody. You know, there's, you know, we have, well, I mean, Romero's a good thing to use because it's always zombies are the subplot.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, Night of the Living Dead, it's about ownership. It's about actually a black man who's taking charge in 1968 against, you know, kind of a racist, you know, white guy who's none of them own the house. But, you know, Ben takes charge, mm-hmm. You know, and the same thing with, you know, Day of the Dead with, you know, the military's brought in. On that, and you still have a hero. I guess one thing is always the black guy is the hero in those films. Even Land of the Dead, the fucking lead zombie is a black guy. Like, that's pretty badass. But anyways, you know, it's just, I like the social issues that surround it. Uh-huh. The reason why The Walking Dead, the comic, is good.
Right, exactly.
Is because, you know, we are dealing with people dealing with each other, and the zombies are in the background. And what they – I think one thing to get into The Walking Dead, one of the reasons why I stopped watching it is they took the characterization out.
Yeah.
And they changed people to make them such a cliche character. Like the cool thing about the comic book was that no one was cliche. You couldn't tell where anybody was going. Mm-hmm. You know, like you know, the whole thing like with Shane and Lori – oh, everybody likes Shane because he's sexy and mysterious. No, Shane's a fucking asshole. And Carl fucking kills him as a human being. Like, in the comics, Shane never gets bit. He pushes Rick, and then Carl pulls out his gun and blows his head off. That is a fucking
character. Well, you know what it is, right?
What?
The thing that happened with The Walking Dead is the same thing that happened with Sons of Anarchy, and I like to call it the Walmart effect. Hmm. Once you can buy a t-shirt for your show in Walmart, the storytellers and, you know, the showrunners are now forced to write plots that are accessible for the lowest common denominator. And I'm not trying to say, like, oh, if you shop at Walmart, you're a shitbag. I shop at Walmart. But I'm saying now we have like a general populace of people that it's now going to, you know, cover a wide range of backgrounds, ethnicities, intelligence levels. And the only way to appeal to all of them is if you go all the way to the bottom, because then at least every single person watching it is understanding. So then that means that things get simpler. A lot of the complexities of these characters get taken away. We start getting more stock characters.
Yeah.
And the story starts to struggle because of it. And not only that, but now we're also in this, you know, social media style world where, you know, there's the if Daryl dies, we riot bullshit. And now... you're pigeonholing your storytellers to where, like, what, like, because they wanted to kill off Norman Reedus, didn't they? And then they were like, oh shit, now we can't because, like, he gained such a following. And, like, that's fucked up. Like,
that's stupid. Now
yeah, he runs the show. He makes the decisions,
and, like,
now.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was supposed to be just kind of like this side character, and now he's the fucking star. And, like, that's fine. That happens.
Also, not in the comic book.
But truth, but like, well, and like, that's the problem. And that's, I think, because so many, like, because The Walking Dead is so big, and like, I could vent for hours about how much I cannot stand what The Walking Dead has done to, like, conventions and what have you. But because it's gotten so big, it has to be the source material that everybody is, you know, basing things off of, because it's the most popular and it's the most accessible.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a good thing, but, you know, we're in, like, this weird kind of conundrum right now with film and television where no one's really making money anymore, and they need guaranteed money. And that's why things like Fear the Walking Dead are coming out, even though it's so fucking boring, I can't even function. People are going to eat it up and love it because it's basic and it's simple and they get it.
Also, I think Frank Darabont got pushed out because he wanted to stick close to the source material of the comics and push expectations and keep it dire and dark and the way it's supposed to be. And then it's like you can pinpoint the moment he got forced out basically of the writer's room and was done being the showrunner. Because the TV show, it's in season one. You can tell, you know, that during the end
of... Sixth episode.
Yes, exactly. And
that's because that's when I stopped, because when the sixth episode happened, I was like, wow, this is taking a different weird turn.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't normal. Like, it's completely out of place. Like, going to the CDC, throwing the grenade against the glass. I'm like, where are you guys getting grenades? Like, where's just the normal, like Western-style fucking zombie killing?
Yeah.
And there's a big difference between taking, you know, artistic liberties. Like, personally, Game of Thrones takes artistic liberties. I'm not spoiling anything. Don't freak out. But, like, the artistic liberties that they take are meant for a reason. Like, they're smart. People are like, oh, this thing happened to this character, but really it was supposed to be to this character. And I was like, yeah, but they don't have... They only have 10 hours a season to develop these storylines. They don't have time to dedicate, you know, audiences' emotional interest in, like, some bullshit secondary character that no one cares about. The world's already vast. So, no, that makes complete sense. Whereas The Walking Dead, there's not that – you don't have crazy hierarchies and political landscapes and kingdoms and fucking dragons to act around. You have, like, 10 people – and a bunch of zombies. Like, holy shit, you have no reason to be going off the rails the way you are. I mean, I get the idea of, like, wanting to, you know, keep people surprised and whatever, but, like, God, it's like they don't even fucking care anymore.
Yeah, it's all about the money.
Yeah, and that's
writing
exactly
it out as long
why,
as they possibly can.
And that's exactly why zombie films are starting to suffer because of it. Because they almost have to be reflective of The Walking Dead, or they're not going to make money, or studios aren't going to give them money to make the films.
Yeah, it's amazing though that zombies have been around for such a long time. My kids play Minecraft; they know what zombies are. My 3-year-old pretends he's a zombie. You know, it's so ingrained in our culture now.
And yet we still make movies where the first half of the entire film is, what's wrong with those people?
Right. We don't need to spend all that time anymore. And you know what? That's another thing that I think Wormwood does right. It puts you in the middle of it, and it gives you a little explanation. It shows you an example of the main character and his family, which is great. And that's what I appreciate, you know, these movies. And a lot of the video games are kind of throwing you in the middle of it now to the 2D games that I've played. That's makes it more fun because we don't need to know. We don't need the first half hour being the setup for the virus, you know. But it's just amazing how zombies really have entered the culture. I think because when I was a kid, I was terrified of zombies. I didn't pretend to be. They scared the living shit out of me. And I didn't even really watch my first zombie movie until I was in college. Because I was so like, oh, I don't know, you know, I was such a wuss when it came to horror movies. But it's weird that, like, my kids, you know, I mean, they haven't seen a zombie movie. They've seen the video games I play. They've seen the stupid zombies in Minecraft, you know, blockhead zombies. But
have they not seen Paranorman?
They've seen Paranorman, yes. Yeah, but that's all, like, animated. But I think Paranorman's probably gets it right, you know, as far as being a kid property. But I'm excited.
Arsenal of kid-friendly horror. I'll hook you up.
I'm like, what should I show? I need to show them a real zombie movie. And I'm not going to show them, like, the newer, ultra-violent, disgusting things. I want to take it back to Romero. So I'm like, where do I start? Probably, you know.
Start with Night. Dead.
Probably. But they're due to kind of finally see where it started, I think. Because it's so funny how their perception of them, they're just monsters. You know what I mean? And that's it's a form of monster that they can pretend and chase each other around the house and, you know, say zombies, brains, and it's really hilarious. But
just don't forget there's titties in Night of the Living Dead.
Well, and yeah, but they're zombies. You know what I mean? It's whatever.
They're dead titties.
They're dead, whatever.
Dead titties.
All right. So all that said, I think Wormwood is pretty cheap.
It's like $10 or something.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. If you want, like, if you're like me and you like having the extra features, it's cheap to pick up. But if you're on the fence, yeah, it's on Netflix, man. And I think all of these IFC Midnight films end up on Netflix. So
isn't one of their contemporary releases that's actually decent. They're getting better.
Yeah, there's a couple other – I wanted to mention that too. There's a couple other IFC Midnight films that showed up that Scream Factory put on on Blu-ray, and they're also on Netflix. Have you seen those? There's the
– Name them.
Oh, there's that Alien one.
Alien Outpost?
Alien Outpost.
Yeah, it's all right. It's fun.
Which I started watching, but I did not finish because I fell asleep.
I think Summer House is another one, right?
Summer House – There's one more.
It's okay.
That starts like with a P or something. I can't remember.
Pretentious.
So pretentious?
I'm just kidding.
Anyway, the IFC Midnight movies, like, you know, I mean, at least we're not getting chiller movies anymore, you know. And I think the IFC Midnight films at least are worth checking out. They at least IFC kind of puts a little more thought.
And we're getting IFC movies on Blu-ray now, so that's a good thing.
Exactly.
Because IFC wouldn't put shit on.
Yeah.
I know, I'm still waiting for it. They need to put out that Saint Nick on Blu-ray.
I loved that movie.
Not happening.
Yeah.
So, but it's cool. I mean, it's cool that we're they're covering both bases, that they end up digitally to watch on the streaming sites. And then if you want, I think Scream Factory is putting enough, or IFC and Scream Factory are putting enough into the Blu-ray versions to really warrant kind of a purchase. You know, they're not just slapping him on Blu-ray and just, you know, movie only. I think that they're aware that there has to be some reason for someone to actually pick up the physical media these days. So,
you know, and
bless you.
On the Walking Dead closing note, you know, I've talked shit about Walking Dead for years. And then, you know, people are always like, well, it's not going to be just like the comic. I was like, well, the difference – here's my closing argument. No big deal. The difference isn't the – like, oh, they did this different. They did that different. The point is that when you talk to somebody and you ask them about what characters they like, that's the part that bothers me. Because you like all the wrong people. You know, you like Shane, and people like the governor. And I was like, I've never felt so disgusted and dirty after reading the Walking Dead comic of who the governor really is and what he did. Like, he's literally the worst person in the entire world. And on closing note, the survivors are actually the bad guys in the comic. They're not good people.
Right.
They're bad people. Like, by issue, like, fucking 50, these guys are fucking, like, they do not care. If you have something they want, they will kill you and they will take it. But in the TV show, it's like they fucking find a Chili's and they talk about how cool Chili's used to be. You know? Like, there's a sequence in the comic where they go to this thing called the community, which I think they talk about it in the TV show. Well, at the community, they have this normal thing, and, you know, they're like, oh, Rick, you're a sheriff, so you'll be the sheriff of our, you know, little community. And everybody has a job. Everybody has a purpose. And they're like, but the thing is there's no guns. And they're like, well, what do you do with the guns? And like, we have, you know, basically we have, like, a, you know, an ammunition, you know, a stockpile of guns. And so, like, they're in the community, and then one night he says to Glenn, he's like, Glenn, this is what we're going to do. We're going to fucking steal the guns and we're going to take over this goddamn place. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, you guys actually have like a place of sanctuary now, and they're willing to risk it all just to be in charge. Like, those are characters, not about going around crying about how awful everything is. Like, that's the big difference between the comic and the TV show. Like, from what I've seen, because I've watched – a couple episodes here and there because I'm at my parents' house and my parents are obsessed with it. So I've seen like little excerpts and stuff like that, and I, you know, maybe watch a clip online just to see, and I'll just laugh. But it's just so mind-boggling to me of how much it has changed. But like, people are still into it, but I don't think they know what they're missing. You know, I think that's the part. Because, I mean, obviously, everything is going to be different. Any movie to, you know, book to movie and, you know, comic book to movie, even remakes, of course, things are going to be different. But not that dramatically different to where the characters are all fucking pussies. That's the one thing that really bothers me about The Walking Dead. Like, Rick, like, you know, I always heard people, like, say, oh, Rick's a pussy. And I was like, no, Rick's the most fucking badass person in the fucking comics. The dude gets his fucking hand chopped off and he still kicks ass. You know?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, fucking Rick gets his hand chopped off eventually at some point. They probably won't do
it's
that.
It's already because... been spoiled on Twitter.
But he
oh,
does,
it hasn't
he...
happened in the TV show yet?
I don't think so, because people aren't going to accept
great.
A fucking,
we're gonna
you
get,
know...
We are going to get hate mail.
Oh, whatever.
I was just thinking about that. I was like, some asshole is going to comment and be like, actually, if you watch the show, fuck off.
Well, I mean, I've seen my point, and I talk to my parents, like, I mean, I hang out with my parents constantly, and they always, my mom's always like, well, this just happened.
Hello?
Did Brad. We lose Brad?
Brad.
He's, that's what happens, man. You talk shit about Walking Dead fans, and they riot, and they come
Hello?
After you.
They just sabotaged the show.
They took Brad.
Wow.
Game over, man.
He's gone.
Game
Brad,
over, man.
Brad,
game
what the
over.
Fuck happened?
Hey, there you are.
Oh.
We're going to keep it going.
Anyways.
I'm not going to edit this shit. Let's go.
Like, you guys talk shit after I dropped out?
Oh, yeah, we totally talk shit.
The fucking Walking Dead masses didn't like me.
No, no.
That's exactly what he said.
But, it's not just shit on anybody that likes the show. If that's what you like, that's what you like. You know, I'm not going to crack on people's taste. I mean, if that's what you, if you really legitimately like The Walking Dead, then good for you. Keep it going. I don't care. You're bringing horror to television, which is acceptable now, which is really cool. You know, American Horror Story, the same thing. I don't fucking like that show. But I'm super happy that it's on television and people dig horror, because that mm-hmm. does – that's a big thing for the horror community. It's being accepted. It's not true horror, I would say, not to step on any toes, but
– Yeah, but it helps us stay out of the news when somebody fucking kills someone and they're like, oh, there was a horror fan. That must be why.
But, you know, it's just – You know, my biggest thing is I've always been big on the comic book, and, you know, like, minor changes happen. You know, the fact that they actually know about, like, everybody has the disease, it depends on when you turn, or you haven't turned yet, or, you know, you're immune to it. The fuck? No, they just fucking deal with it. Like, zombies are out there. We don't have time to fucking try to find out where this came from. We have to band together, kill everybody, and survive. Like, that's the goal in the comic, and that's what I really like about it. And I think they lost that whenever they started doing this television show. From what I've seen and heard, like, for anybody that says the governor is actually great and they love him, and then Andrea apparently ends up banging and hooking up with the governor, no, the governor fucking hates everybody. He beats the shit out of Glenn. He beats the shit out of Rick. And then he rapes and almost kills Michonne. And then they fucking seek revenge on him. Like, that's the badass part about, you know, the Walking Dead comic. And then, of course, the governor does more awful things after that. But anyways.
Right.
It's just the characterization, I think, really fucked the show. Because they made everybody the same. Everybody's a whiny little bitch. And in the comic, like, there's such, like, this hardcore like blend of like just love and camaraderie, like even though they don't like each other, they trust one another. And that's what I really liked about it. Like, even though, because they're on the brink of all dying, that they know that I really don't fucking like you, but if I don't have you on my side, there's a good chance that I'm going to die. or my friends are going to die. So I have to team up with you. I have to be your friend. You know, I hate you, but I'm still going to fight next to you and save your life and take a bullet for you or a bite. You know, and that's what makes the comic so unique and cool, is because, you know, they really don't have anywhere else to turn aside from each other. And it's really the fucking comic book's hardcore. I mean, fucking, yeah. There's a child rapist that kills, like, kids and eats them, you know, and the fuck, like, that's insane. That's never going to end up on television. Not that I want to see that on television, but that's insane. Like, that's a really dark moment. I mean, it's not as, you know, gory and awful as, you know, I said it was. It's very, like, you know, more or less toned down. But it's really fucking dark. And, of course, they're not going to put that on television. I understand that. But it's just, it serves so much purpose for the characters, because it's like, oh, you know, you can put us in danger. You're going to get us killed. Bam. You're dead. And you don't have that in a lot of books and TV shows and movies. You don't have that characterization, because we watch movies. They're only 2 hours. We don't have time to grow with these people. And with The Walking Dead, with the comic book, it's going on and on and on and on. So we get to grow with them. They're allowed to do those types of things. And when the TV show was coming around and talked about it, I was like, holy shit, I'm actually going to see this. Like, that's going to be awesome. And the first 5 episodes is by the book. And then that last episode of the first season, and then that second season starting, I was like, no, man, this is so bland. You know, and it's yeah. it was upsetting. But yeah. I mean, like I said, if you like it, you like it. Good for you. Not shitting on you. It's just it sucks. It really. It's just a waste. It's just a waste of.
Well, it's,
you know,
it's a waste of potential. I think that's the thing. That's the way.
Yeah,
we
waste of potential.
Hard.
Yeah.
We see where all this could go, and it never went there. So after, you know, it deviated from there. So oh well. All
that
right.
was a nice rant.
Moving along.
Enjoyed it.
Moving along. Let's jump into stream. Wait. Scream. Fuck.
Stream screams.
Stream screams.
Nate, wake up!
There's something very important I forgot to tell you.
Don't fucking scream at me!
If you scream, I'll break your neck. Don't scream, miss. Don't scream.
All right.
You're the worst.
You got the intro from Navajo Joe.
I don't know what I'm doing. All right. Dun-dun. So today's pick.
There are so many dogs lifting up their head
to the side right now.
My
head's twitching right now.
You really needed to watch Navajo Joe.
I'll end up watching it.
We should have a Western episode. Jesus yeah. Christ. I'm fucking stupid.
Horror Western.
No. Just fucking
yeah.
straight up Westerns.
Burrowers forever.
Yeah, I mean, but horror Westerns
Near
as well.
Near Dark forever.
Yeah, that's true. Near Dark's very much like yeah. a Western.
All right.
We should do that.
Sure.
I'll bust out some fucking crazy-ass Westerns.
Today's Scream
What are we
streams.
Talking about?
We are talking about 1986's April Fool's Day.
Cordially invites you to a party to end all parties.
The craziest party that could ever be. Don't turn on the lights, because I don't want to see.
April Fool.
Welcome to my home and lifestyles of the rich and undeserving.
Wrong one.
Cheers.
Join 8 privileged guests who are just dying. To have fun.
Wow, what is this, the bridal suite? You like it?
The ladies.
I find a use for it.
The gentlemen.
We did, on the first date.
The young.
Well, basically, I possess an essential lack of seriousness.
Run, kid! And the restless.
You are such a jerk.
Everyone is having such a good time. It's scary.
Is something wrong?
Radio is blasting.
someone's knocking at the door. I've seen so many things.
April Fool's Day. Get ready to party till you drop. Rated R starts Thursday, March 27th at a theater near you.
Now, this is available on DVD, but it's not available on Blu-ray.
It's available on HDX on Vudu.
Yep, it's a bit more pricey than the other ones we've been talking about, but still, $13.99.
If you have your DVD, you put it in your digital
thing.
Oh, that's
right, you can upgrade this one.
And you can get it for like a couple bucks.
There you go. So this is, you can upgrade this one if you have the DVD, which I haven't got to my horror stack yet, so I'll have to get to that very soon.
This is one of my very first horror films, by the way.
Was it? This is one I always, you know, this was the most, probably one of the most memorable VHS box arts.
The noose with the hair.
Yeah. I would always look at. And just wonder, like in my mind, wonder like how this movie plays out and everything. And it's kind of standard slasher setup. You got a group of friends. They go to somebody's mansion to party, and people start getting picked off because there's a murderer on the island or whatever. It's like on the island, isn't it? That the mansion.
Yeah, no, it's on an island.
And of course, kids get picked off one by one.
But it's so much fun.
But it is. This is one of my...
And Biff is in it.
Yes. This is one of my favorite 80s slashers.
And Deborah Foreman.
This is definitely
at the
top of them. Top
and
of
Amy
the
Steele,
list.
Which is... She's super cute.
Yes. Directed by Fred
really
Walton.
Is.
And So Brad, why did you pick April Fool's Day?
Well, April Fool's Day has always been iconic. So if you haven't seen April Fool's Day, which I hope that you have, and most people have, so we'll just put it on our spoiler thing, because I think to talk about, truly talk about why it's different.
Definitely.
So for the next maybe, 15 minutes, skip over this section if you haven't seen April Fool's Day.
Watch it right away and come back.
The reason why I like it is because of the ending.
Yeah.
Because it completely just, like, it's not a dream sequence, it's just this elaborate plan and hoax, but there's also this really dark ending to where it is kind of sinister in a way, because you try to think of like Muffy and Buffy, it's always funny, but what is actually, like, is something going to happen? And that also comes from reading the novelization when I was like a teenager, because the ending is Skip actually goes back to kill her, and then he fails. And it's kind of unique ending in that note for the novelization. But it's just that it's.
Hello.
It's what? Oh. No, I was taking a break. I was taking a breather. But it's just the whole thing with like she pops up. And or Muffy screams, and then like the razor blade, and then the fake blood, and then we have that like kind of weird sequence with the Jack in the Box, and it's just like, I don't know, it's just so different, because most films somebody would wake up from a dream, but this one had this like elaborate plan, but it also kind of has this dark ending. To the point of you kind of question the motivations, and maybe something's going to happen after this. Maybe someone's going to die. Mm-hmm. And that always kind of stuck with me as a kid. Watching it as an adult, it's just more fun of a more or less a slasher. But as a kid, I really thought there was more to it. And I still think there is in a way. But it was just, it's completely different. I sobered up. By the way, when you mentioned Northman Viking Saga.
Awesome. My plan worked.
I got really warm. Like, I started sweating because I was like, why the fuck are you talking about this movie? But, it's a fun, it's got a great score by Charles Bernstein, who scored a shit ton of films.
Didn't this just get a soundtrack released? Isn't there a company that you subscribe to their membership, and they send you basically a CDR each month of a ripped vinyl record. I think this was one of them. I think Brian Brian Sauer got it, and I was too late. I missed out on it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, I mean, the soundtrack's available through different things, but, I mean, Charles Bernstein's a pretty, you know, well-known dude. He's, you know, did the soundtrack to Nightmare on Elm Street. He did the soundtrack to Dudes, which is kind of an underrated John Cryer flick. One of my favorite movies, Excessive Force, with Thomas Ian Griffin. But he did that. It's, you know, directed by Fred Walton, who did one of my favorite and weirdest films, I think, pacing-wise, is When a Stranger Calls. He directed that.
I love
it
so much.
But take into account When a Stranger Calls and April Fools, the guy really was trying to do something new with horror. Because
he was doing the M. Night Shyamalan thing before it became hacky and hokey. Like, it's well thought out, it's well executed, and it's not just like, hey, here's a twist ending to be a twist ending. It's like, no, like, it's integral to the entire plot of the whole film.
I mean, go ahead.
I was saying, but I think that that's kind of what set him above the rest, is that, you know, obviously, it's not to the same extent, but, like, when people still to this day are finding, like, little things that are hidden in Harry Potter that are, like, hidden in book two that make something in book seven make total sense, I think that's a lot of how he, you know, wrote his movies, is that there's, like, these little hints that are, like, dropped all over the place that you don't fucking catch, and then it happens, and you're like, oh, shit, how did I miss that? I don't know. I love stuff like that, and I think that April Fool's Day is great, because, like, you sit there and you watch the timeline of, like, where people were going and what they were doing, and you're like, oh, wait, no, this all makes total fucking sense.
That's fun to rewatch. It's a fun one. The ending makes it really fun to revisit this film multiple times, for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, too, going back to what we were talking about with Wormwood, it's a fun movie. Like, this isn't a, like, vindictive, like, mean slasher film. Yeah, the ending is a little warped, and it makes you, like, I think that's what officially, like, cements it into horror, like, into the horror genre, is that it's not just, you know, oh, haha, everything's funny. It's like, yeah, everything's fun and fun for the time being. Or is it? And, like, that's what makes it so much better, is that they threw in the or is it.
Yeah.
You know, and the cool thing about Walton, because I'm a pretty big fan of Walton. I've seen most of his films, but, you know, with the same thing as with with When a Stranger Calls. When a Stranger Calls is just so oddly paced, because the beginning of the film, we have the babysitter, and she's in the house, and it gets extremely intense. And then once kind of the opening's done, which is a very long time, it gets into this weird, let's get to know the killer mode. And it completely, like, it's super intense, becomes kind of your normal hider in the house slasher, and then just stops and becomes kind of this psychological drama. And then we pick back up.
Hello?
Did we lose him again?
Hello, hello?
I hope Sean. He comes back and is just like, April Fools!
Wait, can you guys not hear me?
We hear you now.
You disappeared.
Oh, April Fools. what did you hear me say about the When a Stranger Calls bullshit?
Yes.
Okay, and another film that he has that's so fucking good. He made so many goddamn TV movies, but they're so fucking good. He has this one called I Saw What You Did, and it's about these – I think it's two girls. They're calling and just playing pranks, like, I saw what you did, ha, 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 ha. But they actually call somebody that just murdered someone, and the person truly believes that they saw him, so he frantically tries to find out who did it or who called him. It's so fucking insane, like, and it's so fucking good. But he, like, I don't know, he just kind of takes these normal things and just spins them on this web to just be so intense. I mean, he has that movie with, I think, Kathleen Quinlan with them in the skyscraper, where she's locked in a skyscraper and this guy's fucking hunting her. He has that movie called Homewrecker with that fucking robot that goes insane in the house. Like, it's supposed to be this...
I need to track down more of his filmography.
Oh, yeah. His fucking filmography is fucking great. But it's a... it's this robot that's called Lucy that the scientist has made, but it falls in love with the guy that...
Oh, my God, like, it's Smart House. Sorry. I know that Smart House came way after that film, but there's a Disney Channel original movie where Katie Sagal plays like a HAL-type robot house, and then she like personifies as a housewife and falls in love with the husband and then tries to like kill the... Well, she doesn't... It's a Disney movie, so she doesn't try to kill anybody, but she like goes rogue inside the like as the robot house. Oh my god, sorry.
Yeah, this one
That's crazy.
Yeah, the scientist, he does this computer and it's called Lucy, and then the scientist, I forget his name. Well, anyways, he tries to get back with his wife, and then this basically thing tries to kill her. And you know, it's just such a normal idea, but it's just, he does it so well. And he also has a movie about the guy that kills the nuns as well. It's
is that the Rosary Murders?
Donald Sutherland's in it, but it's a serial killer who confesses to these priests that he's killing nuns. Dude, it's like, he feels like he's, in a way, this horror movie version of fucking Larry David. Like, where he has just like these, like, something that happens to him during the day, and he's like, or like he's just walking around the street, oh, I wonder if a serial killer would ever confess to murders, what the priest would do. You know, that type of thing. But he just takes it to this new level. And, you know, he's really a great director, and it's sad that his movies kind of weren't, you know, talked about more, or – because he made some – like all these are made for TV movies, yeah. But – don't make that same thing, because in the 80s and fucking 70s and 80s, made-for-TV movies were fucking great.
Oh, yeah, I think I Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. Homewrecker.
Yeah, well, I think when A Stranger Calls was originally made for TV, was it not?
I'm not sure. All I know is that Carol Kane is a goddess, and she's amazing in that film.
Yeah, I want to say that was a made-for-TV movie, but aside the point, like, he just does so many cool things with his films, and that's the one thing that I really, truly love about April Fool's Day, because it was like, hey, let's make a slasher, but let's do something that no one – because if it ended with everybody dead and, you know
– it would have been every run-of-the-mill slasher film that came out in that decade.
Buffy, like, there were twins, and they decided to kill everybody, and, you know, they want the fortune for themselves and shit. Okay, great. But April Fool's Day stands alone because it tried to do something different. Yeah, it's not a true slasher of, like, you know, a bunch of people dying and the killer running away or getting killed at the end, you know. But it's just like, I wanted to do something new and creative.
I'm trying to figure out who wrote this, and I'm trying to look. I'm like, did he write under an assumed name? Because I'm looking up the credited writer is Danilo Bach, who is credited for being a producer on Beverly Hills Cop, but this is his only, like, writing credit is April Fool's Day.
Yeah. I don't know. I think weird. With Walton,
he did a couple TV movies.
Walton did have his hands in a lot of his movies with the scripts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure by his running filmography, because, I mean, this came later. Like 1986 was April Fool's Day, so he's done a lot of movies before then. He has this, unless he came across a script and he's like, wow, this is something that I would think of.
Right.
But I guarantee that ending's him.
Yeah.
I bet you anything that movie fucking had a twin sisters killer, and then he was like, no, fucking, that's too normal and cliche. Let's just fucking do something new.
Well, yeah, cause
sounds more like it.
Yeah, because as somebody who's involved with like Beverly Hills Cop and stuff like that, that's you can't get more. You know, those are great, fun movies, but I mean,
but they're very, very conventional, yeah, by the number.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And that makes sense to me because like, there's not a whole lot of writing credits here, but yeah, his movies definitely have a theme to them, and
it's
they're
fun.
They all have an unconventional, not a Shyamalan twist to them, but an unconventionalness to them. You know.
Yeah, it's actually When a Stranger Calls Back was made for TV. I had to look it up.
Gotcha. Because
I couldn't remember, because I was like, that's really dark with the kids upstairs and shit. So I don't know if that would be made for TV, but the sequel was. And the sequel is just as fucking good as the original. Hmm. Like, it's up on par with that. So, anyways, awesome. Yeah, Fred Walton fucking kicks ass.
Awesome. Well, if you've been wanting an HD version of April Fool's Day... you can upgrade your DVD on Vudu.com.
And it looks
also
good.
Don't watch the remake.
Oh, yeah, the remake's up there, too.
Don't.
There's a couple remakes, right?
There's the one, the 2008 one is on Vudu, but I wouldn't doubt that.
That's like the dinner. That's like the dinner party
one,
right?
I have no idea. Yeah.
Right, and it's basically, it's not fun.
Isn't there an urban remake, too?
There might be. I'll have to look that up, but I always think of, I mean, they're kind of similar, but also not, is the Danielle Harris directed Among Friends. That's the move. Like, that's April Fool's Day if you suck all the fun out of it.
That's funny. Very cool. So this is available, so check it out if you haven't. This was on Netflix for a while. It's probably.
And I think this is a Paramount movie, not Lionsgate.
It's Paramount.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, but a decent transfer, decent transfer. Deborah Foreman's in HD. She's got the cutest smile ever. you know, and of course, you know, like you said, Biff is in it, which is great to see him.
That guy's awesome.
To see him again, but yeah, it's a great soundtrack, fun little slasher that has a twist. You know, and if you haven't seen it, shame on you. This is definitely one of the better slashers out there.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it is unique and a lot of cool kills, like,
oh yeah, you
know, a lot of cool shit happens in the movie. So, but anyways, yeah, definitely a must. It's definitely this film's talked about a lot more than some of our previous stream screams, but I think this one is easily dismissed because it isn't, like I said, by the ending, it isn't a true slasher, but it's a great movie. If you want to take the slasher out of it, it's just a really fun movie.
It's a fun one, for sure.
So,
all right, let's dive into our video. Oh my god.
Nikki.
Well, here we are at last. Right where we ought to be. Video.
Oh my god!
Let's hit the slopes.
Man, oh man.
Let's hit the slopes
one,
with Iced.
Yes,
1988's
Iced. Another slasher.
Even the title is so 80s. Like, oh, fantastic. You got Iced.
Directed by Jeff Quitney. And starring none other than Lisa Loring is in it. She was Wednesday from the Addams Family.
Ooh, God, I missed that.
Deborah DeLizzo is the star, I guess, to it. But this one, yeah, this dude, I'm so glad you recommended this one because you know, I always talk about like how I kind of get bored of slashers and stuff like that, but this one has just enough going for it, and especially
the POV of the killer has enough going for it.
There's so, like, many moments in this film.
Not spoiler alerts, but literally the POV of the killer is a broken ski goggles.
It's awesome.
Broken,
it's so
ski
great.
Goggles.
Yeah.
And it's
okay,
not
but my question
clear.
Is this.
It's fucking
why do you know so much about, like, snow-capped horror films. Because, you know, first it was Blood Tracks, now it's Iced.
Like, I love
Are you just, like,
horror.
Sitting at home, like, fucking
no,
watching
No, I love
ski
horror
lift?
In the wintertime.
I mean, this preceded Cold Prey, of course, you know.
Yeah, I fucking love horror in the daytime and during snowstorms.
Yeah. This one
because
yeah.
you literally you don't have a place to go. You can't fucking run. It's terrifying. Have you tried to ever run in the snow? It's fucking impossible.
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah.
So that's the reason why it draws. I'm so drawn to it. I mean, it's actually. Huh?
I was gonna say, where the hell did you find this movie? Because for me, this was new to me.
I have it on tape.
Well, I mean, but when did you initially discover this film, this flick?
Dude,
on
when
VHS?
I was little. You when I was little.
At a video store?
Yeah, it was like Blockbuster or something, and I rented it, and then I eventually bought it from Blockbuster, I think, when they started getting rid of all their tapes.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was just it's just a film that always kind of stuck with me, just because, number one, it's really weird.
Yeah.
And it's not your, again, it's not your, I mean, it does.
That's an understatement.
It does have your, like, normal, like, bullshit, horror slasher tropes.
Yes.
But just the fact that it takes place through the PO, like a lot of the kills and stuff from the POV of the broken goggles, like that's something super unique. And it's the one thing I kind of remembered forever. Like I always have that image in my head. And the second thing is that it's one of those films that the dialogue's just so odd. Yeah. And this, like, one of my favorite moments also contains one of my favorite moments in, like, B-movie history is the song that they sing in the truck about the girl. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like,
your name's
Tina or something? I forget how the song goes. But it's just, I don't know, it's just an odd slasher. It really is. Like, it feels like it could be like an Italian, like one of those Italian slashers, but it's not. It's like American made, and it was almost hit that brink of the 90s.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just an odd slasher for me, and always it stood out. Side note, this movie, I still say it's a remake, but there is a movie in 2003 called Shredder that came out.
Yeah.
And it's the same fucking thing. The guy is like in a ski mask, fucking killing people on the slopes.
But he's a snowboarder.
It's been and it's just
I don't
like,
know what that movie is, but I am looking it up right now.
I've never seen it, but I've always wanted to check it out.
Oh no, it's not good, but oh my god, like it's worth a shot.
It's an MGM title. Yeah. In that 2003, yeah. You know what's fantastic about this film? Like, it has its pulse on the end of the 80s. There's cocaine galore. There's one of the characters who's obviously on cocaine quite a bit. He precedes his shower by...
Wait, have you been around a lot of people on cocaine to know that they're on cocaine quite a bit?
Well, this guy is just amped up, you know.
Maybe he's drinking amps.
Maybe, but he's definitely... There is a... You know, he's naked before his shower or after a shower or something, snorting up the cocaine. There's the two, like, best friends. Like, there's some homoerotic tendencies with those guys. When they're skiing together and they both kind of fall down and he lays his head on the other guy's stomach.
So dude, it's equivalent to that Rocky montage with Rocky and Apollo when they're on the beach and they're just kind of playing in the water.
Yeah. Then there's the one girl, I don't know if it's the main girl or not, but she's always like, she either has like a dumbbell, and she's always, there's one dialogue scene that goes on forever, and you slowly see a dumbbell come up in the frame, and then down, and then up, and then down. And it goes on, like the dialogue goes on for longer than it should in any normal film. And that dumbbell keeps coming up. And then later on, she's doing the same kind of thing with a rolling pin. So she's obviously all about the fitness.
Oh, I like fantastic. The fitness.
And then if of course, you know, some gratuitous Lisa Loring nudity, who was, you know, Wednesday Addams, which is a bit odd. Kind of makes you feel a little bit dirty.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say.
She was the one in the hot tub.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, I'm uncomfortable now. Why did you tell me that?
Because somebody brought it up to me on Twitter, and then I couldn't shake it. Because that scene came up and I was like, oh god.
Like you literally couldn't shake it?
Right. Ew!
Exactly, yep.
That was a good joke.
It was disgusting.
Yeah. So, but the one fun...
Hello, hello, hello.
He gone.
Paging Brad Henderson.
Brad, come back to us.
Hello?
All right, keep it going. I'm totally not editing this podcast.
Wait, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus. But one thing, spoiler, I think you guys are fucking with me when you do that.
No, we're not.
But the one thing that I really like about it is the ending.
Yeah, best ending shot ever.
Like,
but don't spoil it, because there's a good chance that there are a lot of people who have not seen this movie.
No, I'm not going to spoil it, but I'm just saying that ending, like, if you want to watch one of the probably greatest endings of all time for a horror film, like, it literally makes no sense. And it's just like, it literally was like, hey, how do we do this? How do we wrap up this movie 5 years? Because it's like 5 years later or something. It's like, okay, I got it. Check it out. There's this snowman, and that's all I'm saying. And it's like, wait, that's a really great idea.
Oh, man.
So, but I don't know. It's just an oddball title, and it's definitely underseen. And if you enjoy slashers, I told you, Sean, that there are plenty of oddball slashers out there.
And these are the slashers I love, man.
That are really great. That are a lot of fun. That doesn't have kind of that. Let's make, like, they were all out to make money because they were just jumping out the bandwagon. But there's just some really unique ones where everything was already done, and they usually come about 87 to like 89 mm-hmm. is when they're actually really good, because all of them were already done. Like 81, 84, all those fucking slashers came out. Huge. I mean, just fucking like 30 a year probably, or some bullshit like that. And then the last couple years,
I'm just waiting for them to make a comeback.
I don't know. I would like to see it happen, because they made this slight comeback like around in the year 2000 to 2004.
They all copied Scream, and that was the resurgence, you know.
Right.
Because we had like Chrome Skull and
which is super underrated, by the way.
I like the first one. I don't know the first one's good.
I didn't like the second one.
Hatchet. But then, like, we had that, and then we had Hatchet.
I think Hatchet went for the comedy too much. It was like over the top.
Right now we're starting to get like the Final Girls and Scream Queens and Scream TV. Well, that was the fucking point. but it seems like right now we're starting to get it back. I mean, and this kind of goes full circle with our talk about zombies. I think people are finally sick of zombies, and you know, the easiest thing for American audiences to stomach after that is slasher films, because we already went through Ghost, and like found footage is finally dying. I know that you're got a huge boner for him, Brad, so I'll leave it at that. But I think slashers are the most, again, accessible for the majority of the audiences.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to take over where the zombies have left behind.
I think so. It's funny how
and hopefully
all
that
these...
means that we'll get another movie like Iced, where we have POV broken ski goggles.
That'd be great. More winter slashers, please. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the Cold Prey movies. I still need to see the third one.
Yeah.
But I'm a huge
fan. Doesn't take place in the snow, by the way.
God damn it. Forget it. Fucking movie. It can't be called Cold Prey 3. There's no snow.
Well, it's a prequel. It was before the snow.
Jesus Christ.
So, but the thing is, like, you made a good point. Like, you know, slashers, you know, Halloween and, you know, Black Christmas started the whole craze. You know, and then it died off in, you know, probably 89, 90. And then we had a couple slashers, like, in the 90s, but it really hit hard again with Scream, like, in 96. And then this wave of slashers came out, and then it ended around 2000, but the video market, the direct-to-video market, which is, you know, it's completely different than it was today. I mean, anything when I was working at Blockbuster, and even when I was going, you know, in the early 2000s, if it wasn't had more than one copy, that was a shitty movie that was direct-to-video. And now we're equivalent to kind of what Japan has been for years, that it doesn't matter if it's direct-to-video, it's still the same. Like, the direct-to-video movies were never frowned upon in Japan. They had the same quality. I mean, Miike had a film that was direct-to-video, and he also had one in the theater. It didn't matter. And now we're at that point where, I mean, of course, video stores are basically dead, which sucks.
There's Redbox, Brad. There's Redbox, you know.
Right, but we have all those in
Redbox now. Awful.
Awful. We have...
It's awful.
We have... we still have direct-to-video movies, but... In the 2000s, there was a slew of direct-to-video slashers that fucking kicked so much ass that everybody just ignored, you know? And I'm just going to drop some knowledge on you for you guys to do a little homework. This goes for all the listeners, too.
Okay.
I was saving this movie, but I'll mention it now since we're talking about slashers in uniqueness and fun. There's a movie in 2001 called The Pool. And it is about these 12 kids that basically have one night out to go to this pool where they break into, and there's a fucking killer in there.
The pool and, that eats people.
And no, but I mean, this movie was James McAvoy's in this shit and Isla Fisher before they were popular.
Wow, that's cool.
So it's got an all right cast for the most part. But it's like a legitimately like good slasher film, and it was like 2001, and I think it was I think it was like British or something, like from the UK, I want to say, so it didn't get a lot of play over here, but it was more popular over there. But it's definitely like the cover art is cheesy as fuck. It's got a woman like raised up from the water with this fucking awful artwork of a skull behind her, but definitely something to check out because. I mean, we also had, like, Bloody Murder was another one. The first Bloody Murder's okay. But do you guys remember a film, another 2001, that's Japanese? It's so fucking good. But it was very, very popular in Japan because the movie was based around a Japan reality TV show. But is the director of End of the Line, which is one of the, like, probably scariest horror films ever. Have everybody seen that, End of the Line?
No.
It's like 2007. Man, I'm just dropping knowledge all over the place. But anyways, he did a movie in 2001 called Slashers. That is this contest in Japan. Six people go, and there's just, like, these crazy, like, guy with a chainsaw, guy with a knife, kind of your ordinary, you know, horror icons. And they're put into this competition to stay alive. And it's really fucking good.
What's it called?
It's called Slashers.
Slashers.
Yeah, it's but what I'm saying is that all these films came out around this time, and it was such a saturated market that no one paid attention to it, aside from a few people, me luckily being one of them. but yeah, just do that. Check out Slashers and The Pool, and you'll be hooked on 2000, like, you know, around like 2000, 2003 slashers. Because nice. I mentioned The Cut last time with Molly Ringwald, I think.
Yeah.
And I actually had a few people contact me. Thank you very much for contacting me on Facebook and Twitter, the Twits, saying thank you for the recommendation of The Cut because it's really fucking good. But these actually are, I consider slashers and The Pool way better than The Cut.
All right.
And also check out End of the Line. It's a religious horror film. I actually think you would really like it, Sean.
You had me at religious horror.
It's like hardcore religious horror. Like, these people are trapped in the subway, and, like, these born-again people decide that it's time for the world to end.
Oh, man. See, you say that as, like, there were people – I've known people like that. So that movie is probably terrifying.
No, this movie's fucking I have this really good friend. He's his name's Jason Hornsby. He's wrote a few books. He has 1193 was one of his books. Downward Spiral. He's really big on kind of craziness. And I hold held movie nights every so often at my house, and I would just pick something random, and then one night I picked End of the Line, and I just watched this kid like just jump all over the place, like legitimately like frightened. And after it was over, he said, "Dude, you like I love horror films." He's seen everything. He's like, "But you actually showed a movie that scared the fucking shit out of me." Because he comes from that religious background too. But it's awesome to actually see this film scare the shit out of people.
Yeah. I'm going to check that out soon for sure.
And looking at the cover art, don't just bypass it. And actually don't look at the cover art because it spoils part of the movie.
Okay. What year was that movie? Because there's a 1987 movie with Kevin Bacon.
No, it's 2007.
2007?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So, all right. Well, during this conversation, BJ's Skype died.
Well, it sounds like she's dying when she's on it.
So I think it is...
End of the line.
End of the line.
For the conversation.
We want to thank all you guys for listening, for sure. Drop us a line on Facebook or Twitter. Go to our website, thescreamcast.com, and drop us a comment. We love getting those each week. I try to check them a few times a week, and if you haven't posted before, I have to approve it. But I love hearing from you guys on there, and of course, Twitter and Facebook. We love hearing from you guys there as well. There's links to our Twitter and Facebook, and you can subscribe to the feed on our website, thescreamcast.com. Of course, check out the sponsors, Coffee Shop of Horrors. Use the code SCREAMCAST. You get 10% off your order. Check out grindhousevideo.com. I just placed an order with them this week.
Please.
Please do. But I mean,
let's actually reiterate, like, compare Grindhouse Video prices to Amazon prices. Because yes. It's not that dramatic of a difference. And also, the same thing like with Diabolik. Like, you want these little places to exist. And this is a company that could really, really use your help. So just keep that in mind. But anyways.
Agreed.
That's it.
Use the coupon code SCREAMCAST10. You get a 10% discount on all orders over $25. So great. Here's what I try to do. I try to at least once or twice a month get an order placed with GrindhouseVideo.com. I get movies from all over the place, but I make it a point to order from Mike. His name is Mike. Mike over there, because his service is awesome. Like, I sent him a pre-order list, and usually a week or 2 weeks before the movie's out, he gets them in stock, and he drops me a line. Hey, I got these in stock. Awesome. And I tell him to send them my way. I pay him and we're good to go. Like, you don't get that from like Amazon or whatever. Like, he's very much involved with the orders and you know, it's his shop, you know. And I envy anyone who lives in Tampa, because I would love to go visit this store. I would probably spend a ton of money, more than I should, at that store. But you definitely want, I mean, we don't want to have all our movies only available on fucking Amazon. I mean, you know, these smaller stores kind of, they create kind of community, you know what I mean? Especially like,
yeah,
horror fans and genre fans. Like, I miss having a place. All these places are closed down around me. I got nothing. I got Best Buy. I got Target. Yeah.
And if
Walmart.
You had a video store like this next to you, you or, you know, 45 minutes away, you would drive there.
I totally would. Yeah.
You know, anybody would that listens to this show, you would go to a place like this. Well, this place really does exist, and, you know, we could have, you know, more of these pop up depending on if other people see they're doing well. I mean, there's like Diabolik, which Diabolik provides a service of having like I would think people would go after Diabolik to get stuff that's kind of out there from other countries.
Yep.
I mean, this is only U.S. stuff, but, you know, definitely take a look, compare prices, you know, even if it's a few cents more, a dollar, you're providing, you know, you want them to do well. The same thing is like, you know, oh, it's $20 on Amazon right now, or I can go down the street and get it from this store that I like for $22.
Yeah.
You would get it in person, and everybody would do that, I would think, unless you're the, you know, fucking biggest cheapskate in the entire world. But, you know,
Well, I'd rather have my money go to a store like Grand House Video and Diabolik than Amazon for sure. You know, I mean, that's, and when there's been stores like that around me, that's where my entertainment spending has gone. Unfortunately, that wasn't enough to keep them in business. It's very sad. I've lost like a few near me. It's very sad. All right, moving along. So check them out, grindhousevideo.com, and at least give it a look. And, it's just great. I love hearing from Mike a couple times a month. Also, Wolfman of Mars provides the music for us. Check them out at Bandcamp. I think it's bandcamp.wolfmanofmars. They have a new split EP out, which is really great. And then check out inkspatters.com. It's Kevin Spencer. He did all the artwork for our website and our logo. And his artwork is pretty awesome. So check it out. So those are the people that help support the show. And, of course, oneofus.net. A huge thank you to them for letting us be part of their network. Check out all their other shows over there. And that's all I got. You got anything else?
No, I just love you, Sean.
All right, I love you, Brad. All right, y'all have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.